And welcome to the Rick House. Cyrus Farmer here, and you are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. Folks, we have a lot to get into tonight, so let me give you an idea about what we're going to hear tonight. We're going to be talking about the mess that I think, in my opinion, was created, or I would say embellished, by Brandon Graham with the A.J. Brown comments and Brandon's subsequent ideas and opinions on that on his radio show. We'll also be talking about the history of eggnog. It is that time of year, you know, it's the holiday season. Where did this drink come from? What are its main constructs? How do you like yours? And also, as always, we will be talking about the ever popular, what are you drinking tonight? But first, I do have to get a couple things off my chest, folks. This is Wednesday. I'm recording this on Wednesday. This will be released on Thursday. So today I was in Orlando for the day, Orlando, Florida. As most of you know, I live here in the Philadelphia area. And I flew Frontier Airlines to Orlando and back today. I have to tell you, if I could only fly one airline for the rest of my life, and that airline was Frontier Airlines, I would probably drive everywhere. I would probably never fly. Boy, oh boy, I gotta tell you, guys, no one is trying to do a bad job on purpose. That's my assumption. But Frontier, oh my gosh, they nickel and dime you for every single little bitty issue. It's the absolute worst. I mean, they charge you for seats. They charge you for baggage. They charge you for upgrades. They charge you for check-ins. I mean, literally on Frontier. Some of you have flown it. Some of you have not. On Frontier, literally, you buy your ticket without a carry-on option, unless you want to pay more for it, right? They'll charge you $25, $35, $50. I don't even know what the numbers are. But it is absolutely ridiculous. You know what, Frontier? They will charge you to talk to a person? Let me repeat that. On Frontier Airlines, you get charged $25 to talk to a person, whether it's on the phone or if you're in person at the airport to get checked in. You get charged $25. Does that make any sense to you? Oh my gosh, I was so annoyed. I gotta tell you, I was really, really annoyed with my flying experience on Frontier Airlines. Now, I have to tell you, I understand you get what you pay for. And maybe every single discount-based carrier operates this way, and I'm just unaware of it. I don't fly a lot of discount carriers. Obviously, I would do that in an emergency, but generally speaking, I don't have a lot of familiarity with discount carriers. But man, it was really, really, really annoying. I get to the airport today, Philadelphia International Airport, at, I think I got there at 4:30 in the morning for a 5:20 flight. And they were telling me, oh, you didn't check in on the app. So you missed your flight. I'm like, what do you mean I missed my flight? Paid $350 for this one day flight. I'm going to be in Orlando for all of 6 hours. And you're telling me I missed my flight? They said, well, you can go talk to the person, but it's going to cost you $25. Oh my gosh. Regardless, it worked out. I got on the plane. I got to Orlando. I got back. It was fine, but boy, man, oh man, oh man, oh man. I I'm just not a fan of that level of service. I will say this. I mean, to be fair, they get you there and back safely. I mean, you don't have to push the plane down the runway with your fellow passengers to get it in the air. So there is that. I mean, there's definitely something to be said for that. But the price of the ticket is always higher than what is initially quoted to you online because of all the upcharges. Very annoying. Very, very annoying. Okay, so the obvious question is, Sai, if you had such a bad experience on Frontier Airlines, why did you book a flight with them? Okay, that is a fair question. I'll tell you what. Around 9:30 last night, I got a call from my cousin, one of my cousins. And she was telling me that an uncle of mine who lives in Orlando, Florida, was on life support and that he was probably going to be disconnected in the next day or two from life support. And I, after hearing that news, decided to make my way down there today to see him, pay respects, and, just kind of show up for him because he was a very important person in my life. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. This uncle, it was my uncle Elmer. A lot of people call him Uncle L, short for Elmer. A lot of people call him Mo, short for Elmo. I called him Uncle L or Uncle Elmo. So I found out about 9:30 last night about this. So to be fair, and this is where I will give Frontier some credit. I looked at the other airlines in the, what? I found out about 9:30 and I took a 5:20 a.m. flight. So that's, what, 8 hours, basically, an 8-hour turnaround from the time I found out. Frontier did have the first flight out to Orlando from Philadelphia, so I will give them credit for that without question. So I go down to Orlando to see my uncle. I wanted to, again, pay my respects before he gets disconnected from his life support. But today was my uncle's birthday. It was his 81st birthday. Now, he had a stroke. This guy was the picture of health for the vast majority of his life. But he had a stroke around 11 years ago. Actually, 11 years ago today, he had a stroke on his 70th birthday. Came out of nowhere. No one expected it. No one knew it was coming. And then he had a second stroke during the Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl. So he's had a tough 11 years. He lost part of his leg. It was amputated. He lost his power to communicate clearly, to speak in a way that people could understand him. I mean, if you spend a lot of time with him, then you could actually kind of catch probably about 50, 60, 70% of what he was saying. But it was difficult. And as an actor, I have to say the ability to communicate is such a, it's so precious. I don't know what I would ever do if I lost my ability to communicate to others. So he was going through it the last 11 years of his life. And the only saving grace for me I believe, is that I think that he will be at rest at some point. I saw him in the hospital today, in the ICU, and he wasn't conscious, but he did not look like he was in pain, which is great. And he did not look like he was suffering, which is even better. I hope and pray that God can keep his soul and take care of him in the afterlife whenever that occurs. But I wanted to go down and pay my respects, which is why I was flying Frontier. Let me tell you a little bit about my uncle. This guy, after all of that, those two strokes, the amputation, what's ending up getting him in the end is pancreatic cancer. Apparently, he has pancreatic cancer that has spread throughout his body internally, undetected. No one knew. He was in a nursing home facility, a care facility, and he had stopped eating a couple of weeks ago or a little more. And he finally ended up getting sent to the hospital, and they found out he has pancreatic cancer. His body was rife with it. So what are you going to do? He fought to the end. And whenever the end comes, he is going to have experienced a fantastic life. This man was a husband, a father, a veteran, a business owner. For a couple decades, my uncle Elmer owned an auto body shop in San Francisco called Coling's Auto Body Shop. It was at 16th and Bryant. It's right in the heart of the Mission District, if you know San Francisco at all. And I have to say, he was an unassuming man. Now, what do I mean when I say he was an unassuming man? Okay, I'm going to tell you. He probably had more money in his pocket every day when he was healthy than you or I have in our pockets right now. I know for a fact that he had more money in the bank than most of the customers that he served that came into his shop day in, day out in San Francisco. It's amazing. You know, I asked him one time, because I went to live in the Bay Area right after I got out of college. I was there for about a year and a half, 2 years almost. And I was trying to get my career started. And I would spend a lot of time at the shop because my father worked at the shop at the time also. So everyone in my father's side of the family kind of gravitated towards the shop and also San Francisco. I had a couple of aunts that lived in San Francisco and or Oakland. I had a couple, like my father and a couple of uncles also lived out there as well. So it was kind of like the hub of my father's side of the family. And I asked him one time, I said, why didn't you rename the shop when you bought it? I mean, it was called Coling's Auto Body Repair. And he said to me, you know, Cyrus, people are comfortable with the name Coling's Auto Body. And I don't need to replace it just to have my name on the door. As long as people are coming in to get their cars fixed, I'll be just fine. And he would tell me stories about how people would come in and ask me, I need to see the owner. Where's the owner of this shop? And they were always, almost 100% of the time surprised when my uncle would tell them, I'm the owner. What do you need? Great man. He was an absolutely great man. One of the fondest memories that I have in life is that while I was out in the Bay for a year and a half, 2 years after college, I would meet my father to play golf. every Saturday. And we meet my father, my Uncle Elmer, and my Uncle Bernie. And they would play this golf course every Saturday. It was like clockwork. I don't care what I was doing on Friday, how late I was out the night before, I would always make it to the golf course to hang out with these three men in my family. My Uncle Elmer could hit the golf ball a ton. I mean, he was very, very good off the tee, decent around the greens, and a competent putter. His big deal with golf is that he could get the ball in the hole, which is an enormous skill. You know, there's the old saying, you know, there are no pictures on the scorecard. And my Uncle Elmer, boy, he shot mid-80s, high 80s, most every time he went out to go play golf. A bad round for him was 92, 94, you know? And he was just a tremendous golfer, and he loved, loved, loved the game. He loved golf. You know, he was also a big fan of jokes. He loved a good joke. He would tell a few jokes. And he had a tremendous laugh. Most people in my family, I don't know why, but most people in my family have a very distinctive laugh. It's not the same for every member of my family, but for whatever reason, on my father's side, it kind of tends to run in the family. He had a great laugh. Now, he wasn't perfect. Very few of us are, if any. He could be hard on people, especially, you know, loved ones in his immediate family. But he did so much for so many people that he deserves to be forgiven and celebrated for the life he lived and for his imperfections. I'm going to tell you something. When I was a kid, I was, my Uncle Elmer and his family, my Aunt Jane, my cousin James, and my cousin Chad, they came to visit us. I think I was probably in like middle school, junior high at the time. And, you know, we hung out, da-da-da-da-da-da. And right before he left, my Uncle Elmer, he called all his kids. I have a brother and a sister. He called us all over to say goodbye, and he gave us each a $100 bill. Now, folks, I'm going to tell you. I'm pretty sure at that point, I had never seen a $100 bill before. It was jaw-dropping to me. $100? Wow! Right, so 12, 13, 14 years old, whatever. And I can tell you right now, I used that $100 bill to buy a few boxes of football and baseball cards. I was really into football and baseball cards, and I was collecting them. And I was like, instead of buying a pack for a dollar or 25 cents, I could buy a whole box. I could buy multiple boxes. It was awesome. But all that goes to show you that my Uncle Elmo lived a fantastic life and was a life well lived. And I just want to say here and now, whenever he exits this earth, I want to let everyone know that I love him and that he was a tremendous influence on me and my life and my family's life as well. So here's to you, Uncle Mo. I love you. Okay. On to the show. Folks, I'm not sure whether or not you're aware, but it's been a tough week for the Eagles here in Philadelphia. Brandon Graham, who, again, he's the longest tenured Eagle. Brandon Graham here in Philadelphia, outside of Jason Kelce, is probably the most beloved member of the Eagles organization by the Philadelphia media. Brandon has his own radio show here in Philadelphia on WIP, which is the flagship station of the Eagles. They broadcast the Eagles games, after a win against the Carolina Panthers this past Sunday, it was an ugly win, but it was a win nonetheless. Reporters asked A.J. Brown, you know, our number one receiver on the team, what he thought the Eagles needed to improve upon moving forward. A.J. gave a simple answer. He said passing game, and then moved on, left it at that. Now, that created somewhat of a stir in the media for about 12 hours. But Brandon Graham decided on his radio show. He has a radio show on WIP, as I mentioned before. It happens like it's around 6 o'clock every Monday after the game, after a Sunday game. Brandon decided to basically slam AJ on his radio show. Brandon said that AJ was he needs to grow up. He needs to be more of a team player. Jalen is trying, and Brandon should not worry about his targets, or he shouldn't worry about airing dirty laundry. The dirty laundry AJ aired was, what do we need to improve on? The passing game. Brandon thought that AJ shouldn't be airing that publicly. Now, I got to tell you, Brandon's comments, I think, were way more destructive than anything AJ Brown said. AJ Brown was responding to a question. Now, Brandon, to be fair, was responding to a question too. I think the question they'd ask him was, what do you think about what A.J. Brown said, essentially? But I got to tell you, Brandon walked back his commentary of A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts. I mean, on Brandon's show, he said that AJ and Jalen were no longer friends anymore. Intimated something to that effect, which no one knew here in the Philadelphia market. So it's just information that doesn't need to be put out in public. Now, look, Brandon Graham is a great guy, and he is a fantastic Eagle. Again, he made the most important defensive play in the history of the franchise by sacking Tom Brady in the Super Bowl that they won against the Patriots on the final play of the game. So he is a legendary Eagle. He's going to be Eagles Hall of Famer and well-deserved. But I don't think Brandon needed to jump in to this whole discussion about AJ versus Jalen to quote unquote show his leadership of the team. I think Brandon should have just left it alone. Don't worry about it. Let AJ speak for himself. Let Jalen speak for himself. I don't believe that it was really Brandon's role to actually try to explain what was going on between these two men. So here you have a team that's 11-2, has a puncher's chance at getting the number one overall seed if they can win out and if Detroit ever decides to lose a game or two. And it's chaos, supposedly, in the locker room. In the immortal words of Doc Rivers, only in Philadelphia. Boy, oh boy. I got to tell you. So, I think this whole scenario needs to be addressed, and it has been addressed. Let's be fair. What A.J. Brown said was completely accurate. They do need to do a better job with the passing game. And I love Jalen Hurts. I think he is a tremendous player. But Jalen needs to be more consistent game in and game out, especially with his arm. His stats, I'm gonna read you his stats for the game against Carolina. I have him here. Jalen was, I think, 14 of 21 for, oh my gosh. He was 14 of 21 for 108 yards with 2 touchdowns and 4 sacks. I mean, let's be fair. Yes, he didn't turn over the ball, and I've been a big critic of Jalen turning the ball over. He needs to take care of the ball. He needs to take care of the ball. He needs to take care of the ball. I get it. But, my gosh, I mean, you can't throw for more than 108 yards against a team that's 3-9 that literally is one of the worst teams in the league? When you have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith as your two main receivers? Look, Jalen has to be better. And I think he knows that. Obviously he knows that. So that's not a big deal. There's nothing wrong with saying that out loud. And in my opinion, I don't think AJ went out of his way to try and embarrass Jalen. He was just stating the obvious. They had to be better in the passing game. And I think that's absolutely true. Because when you get the ball to A.J. Brown, he's not being a diva, in my opinion. I mean, you get the ball to A.J. Brown, he improves the team's chances of winning because he is that good of a player. He's as good as Ja'Marr Chase. He's as good as Justin Jefferson. He's as good as any receiver, CeeDee Lamb, you want to name. He can literally tilt the ability for your team to win the game in your favor if you get him the ball. And Jalen needs to do a better job of getting not only AJ the ball, but Devontae the ball. So to me, this was kind of a whole lot of, it was kind of a whole lot of hooey about nothing. AJ said what he said, and to me, it wasn't that big of a deal, but it turned into a bigger deal, in my opinion, because Brandon Graham decided to amplify the situation. And again, I love Brandon Graham. Great player, great guy. But I don't think he needed to weigh in on this situation. He could have just taken a pass on this. Now, this reminds me a little bit. I shouldn't say a little bit. It reminds me a lot of the situation with Coach Sirianni when the Eagles had an ugly win against the Cleveland Browns earlier this season. And Coach Sirianni went to go, you know, chop it up against his own fans here in Philadelphia, yelling at people in the stadium. Surprisingly, the Eagles got through that. And I will say, because of that, I think this is going to really propel the Eagles from here on out. I do think that I was a little worried. Concern is probably a better way to put it. About the Pittsburgh game this coming Sunday. But I think now, after all of this, I think Coach Sirianni is going to get the team and that locker room squared away. I think they're going to put out a tremendous effort against Pittsburgh. I think they're going to win the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, this is not breaking news. Half the people think the Eagles are going to lose. Half the people think the Eagles are going to win. I happen to be with the half that think the Eagles are going to win. And I think they'll probably win out for the season. But some of this could have been avoided, in my opinion, if it hadn't been amplified by Brandon Graham. Now, moving forward. Eggnog. Let's talk a little bit about the history of this drink, this holiday concoction. I want to start with the fact that I've never been a big eggnog fan my entire life. My sister loved eggnog. She would drink it, oh my gosh, as soon as Thanksgiving started, all the way through New Year's. She was a huge eggnog fan. I've never been a big eggnog fan up until about 2 or 3 years ago, because my wife is an eggnog fan. So I've started drinking it now, here and there, and getting in the holiday mood, getting festive with the rest of the family. Most scholars acknowledge that eggnog originated in early medieval Britain, and it was based on a drink called posset, P-O-S-S-E-T, which was a hot, milky, ale-like drink. You know, the history is a little foggy on this. They don't know if it was actually ale that was included or if it was some kind of homemade wine, but essentially milk was a component. It was served warm. It got curdled with the alcohol, and that's basically your base for eggnog as we know it. Now, eggnog became tied to the holidays in the 1700s when the drink hopped the pond from England to colonial America. Colonial America, with its agrarian culture, had a lot of chickens, which is where you use the eggs, and a lot of cows, which is where the milk comes from. Now, eggnog was popularized here in America during colonial America because there was no refrigeration back then. But it was easier to keep the eggnog from turning in the winter months, November, December. No refrigeration out, but it's colder. So you can keep all that without spoiling. Now, most colonial American eggnog was made with Caribbean rum because it was cheaper than the liquor that was being shipped from England. George Washington himself, he actually had allegedly, he had an eggnog recipe. And folks, I want to read this to you because I think it's fascinating. It's very liquor forward. but I want to read this recipe to you and you can tell me what you think about it. Allegedly, the George Washington recipe included 1 quart of cream, 1 quart of milk, 1 dozen tablespoons of sugar, 1 pint of brandy, 1/2 pint of rye, 1/2 pint of Jamaican rum, 1/4 pint of sherry, and 1 dozen eggs. I don't know if I'll ever make that concoction, but it sounds like a lot on many different levels. It was the South. It was the Southern states in colonial America that started putting bourbon or whiskey in their eggnog as opposed to rum. Now, everyone is different, and I would love to hear your opinion on this. How do you take your eggnog? I have to say, as much as I love whiskey, my wife is half Jamaican. And we use, generally speaking, rum in our whiskey. Rum in our eggnog here. Although I will say this. You know, we talked on What Are You Drinking Tonight a couple weeks ago about the Jack Daniel's Barrel Strength Tennessee whiskey. I did use the rest of that in some eggnog, and it was fantastic. And I think I may have to start using Tennessee whiskey with eggnog because that may be my best use for it. If I'm going to have whiskey or bourbon, I'd probably rather have it without the eggnog. I'll have an eggnog, with rum, and then I'll have a bourbon or whiskey afterwards. So we are at the point of the show, which is not only my favorite, but apparently it's your favorite as well. Folks, I have a question for you. What are you drinking tonight? Well, I can tell you what I'm drinking. It is the Balcones Texas Single Malt Whiskey. Folks, let me give you some information about this. This is a single barrel whiskey. It is distilled and bottled by Balcones Distillery in Waco, Texas. It is non-chill filtered. The age statement is 69 months, which is 5 years and 9 months. It's 100% malted barley, aged in French oak barrels. The ABV on this meaty whiskey is 67.8%. I know what you're saying. What is that? That logs in at 135.6 proof. You got your hands full. Now, folks, I want to tell you something. When I say meaty, this is about as meaty a whiskey as you will ever imbibe. It is rich. It is dense. You don't taste the proof, to be honest, when you're drinking it. But it is on the rich side. I mean, you will not finish a bottle in a night or a week. It's a good buy simply because you can nurse this bottle here and there, a drink here and there, a drink here and there, because it's honestly a little rich to drink night in, night out, day in, day out. It's not quite heartburn-y, but it's so rich you can kind of feel the potential that it could be heartburn-inducing. Chocolatey, warm. Again, a very meaty whiskey. Cost me about $95, the bottle did. Depending on where you buy it from, that's probably what you can expect to pay. Anywhere between $80 and $95 a bottle. But I love what the guys at Balcones do. I think they're a fantastic distillery, and they have some fantastic products. So definitely, it's definitely worth having in your bar. It's definitely worth picking up. It's definitely worth trying. Balcones Texas Single Malt Whiskey. Make that addition, and I do not think you will be disappointed. All right, folks. I can tell you that is the show for tonight, but I can also tell you next week we have a very special episode coming and some incredible content coming your way. Next week we are off to the land of the rising sun. That's right, we will be in Japan, and we look forward to bringing you So 67.8% ABV. I said you don't feel it when you're drinking it, but you might feel it when you're trying to talk. All right. So we're going to be bringing you some fantastic content from Japan. Really looking forward to the trip. We will definitely keep you posted. We'll definitely make sure you check out all of our socials because we'll be posting clips here and there of different content. And as always, we will bring you the show in its full glory next Thursday as well, even though we will be overseas. But I think you're going to like a lot of the stuff that we can bring to you in that regard. So until then, Cyrus Farmer, Stomp the Tea. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And as always, we'll see you on the first tee. Hit them straight.